Hello, guys, and welcome to a new episode. And I'm so delighted to have Anna today here with me. And I guess, Anna, you should introduce yourself because what you're doing is so interesting. And well, she's also working in the erotic industry. Or tell me if I'm wrong, or pleasure industry, or how would you call it yourself?
Yeah, how would I call it? I don't know. It's like when people ask me what I do, I always am like, yeah, it's complicated. But thank you for the introduction, Anand. Thank you for the invitation. Yeah, like I said, my name is Anna, aka Pimenta Citrica. That's my pen name, and people also know me by that, which in Portuguese, that's my mother tongue, means something like citric and spicy. What is there to say? I'm an erotic writer and a pleasure activist from Brazil. I've been living in Berlin for the past 7 years, and I've been, well, now, it's, I'm proud to say that I work full time as a content creator, for erotic and sex educational and sexual health content for different platforms.
How did you get into that? Like, how did the topic found you, or found, did you find the topic, or?
It's a really long story, but let's try to get into it. Like, basically, okay, so I've been writing since I was a kid. Like, the first, like, I wrote a book, not really a book. It was, yeah, it was just a little story when I was six, and my teachers were very impressed by it, and they told my parents, who were also happy about it. So I was incentivized from a very young age to write, and this always it has always been my means of expressing myself. And I usually say that the craft found me, not the other way around. Like, I've always known since I was a child that I was going to be a writer. And erotica came a little later. So more specifically, the first sex scene I wrote in my life, I was 12. Yeah, it's a funny thing because I grew up in this very religious conservative state in Brazil, even though my family was not particularly religious, like a little bit, but nothing, extreme. But I could definitely, like, I grew up with a lot of guilt and shame around my sexuality. And I also was, a weird kid, introverted, didn't have a lot of friends. So, as it's usual in those scenarios, one goes online, and that's what happened to me. And that's when I discovered fan fiction. And then when I discovered sexy fan fiction, and that, like, really changed everything for me to, like, be reading about sex online. And I decided to try my hand at it because I was already writing, right? So I wrote this sex scene in which I am having sex with Daniel Radcliffe, of all people, not Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe. We're the same age, by the way. So I was 12, and at the time I think he must have been 13 or something. But what's funny about this is that I wrote this scene from his perspective. So that granted me a lot of freedom. Like, it felt really liberating to step into a man's shoes and be able to talk freely about sex, or write freely about sex. And I really liked that feeling. So I got addicted. Like, I just never stopped. Like I said, I didn't have a lot of friends. Like, I was bullied a lot in school. So the internet kind of became my subterfuge. And by the time that I was like 16, 17, I would just, like, be online. Like, I would get home from school, turn on my computer, read smut the whole afternoon, then write, and then go to school the next day. And instead of paying attention to class, I would just, like, scribble away in my notebook, like, writing sex scenes, sex scene after sex scene after sex scene. And
That is
my teachers were like, they thought I was damaged goods. They were like, this girl is gonna amount up to nothing.
I never understand why everybody thinks we are damaged because we are into that industry. How did you make out a living, by the way, later on? Like, you found your passion, you started writing, you finished.
Oh, no, I wish it was that simple. It was a lot more.
Oh, like, but thanks for telling me, Anna, because people always see in the internet, oh, it's so easy. It's so easy. You just sign up there and you just sign up there. And then you're famous, basically, overnight.
Oh, no. I mean, there is this phrase that we say in Portuguese, it's quem vê close e não vê corre. That basically means like whoever sees you on Instagram, like you post only the good parts, has no idea like the hard work that goes behind it and all the disappointment and the things that don't work out. So
especially in our industry on social media, you get banned and you get locked.
There is also that side of that, of course. So yeah, I mean, it was not, you know, an easy path. And I didn't really, I mean, this was just me like, as a teenager looking for an outlet. I really thought I was like a complete freak, but what was good about it is that I found a community online, like an international community of people that were writing fan fiction. And it was very positive to have like friends online all over the world that I could share this interest with. And I learned a lot because, this world is queer, and you know, as a teenager, it's not only queer, but it's certainly there is a lot of intersection with the queer community. And as a teenager, I started like realizing that maybe I was not straight, which was terrifying. But to have people online that were like going through the same thing was definitely, it made things easier. And through reading all of that, I learned so much because I was obviously not having sex. Like, I was just at home all the time.
Same. I was writing and I was talking to people and giving the best advices, and everyone thought like, what the hell is
she? Oh, she knows what she's doing.
Amazing sex time. And you're like, no, I'm like the most shy girl ever when it comes to guys. But yeah.
I mean, I was not like, I was the epitome of like a, you know, the basement nerd, the whole stereotype. But I was reading about all of these things, and I learned so much, you know. And because I learned about different fetishes, I learned about different realities. So there were stories that were talking about like transgender people and gender reassignment surgery and hormonal therapy way before that was in the mainstream. So I came like in touch with the existence of the trans community, for instance, and different fetishes as I learned what BDSM was, what a safe word was, like all of these things before I even had sex. And I realized in reading all of that and experiencing through the stories kind of what I liked and what I didn't like. Because, you know, there would be like some hard BDSM, like really disciplining, scenes that I would read. It's like, but then I remember when I read like a pegging scene for the first time, I had no idea that it even existed. And it was just like struck a chord, like, oh my God, this is so sexy. That's when I also realized that I really like men, like in women's clothes and makeup. The scenes with that was just like resonate. So I feel like it prepared me a lot for having sex way before I did, because it just showed me like a colorful world, like in a, from a safe standpoint. And I was never very interested in visual porn. Like at the time we didn't have the options that we have today. Right. So it was like mainstream porn that was like scary to me. I didn't want to like, so I feel like that vision that I got through the fan fiction, which is, you know, still erotic, it's still very romanticized, it's still fantasy, but it was very sex positive in the way that it was like queer friendly, it was a lot more inclusive, it just even more body positive, and it just gave me a healthier outlet, so to speak. So, you know, by the time that I finally got to have sex, and funnily enough, like I met my first girlfriend in this community, like she was also writing, and we met online and we started like writing together, and that's how we fell in love. Isn't that cute? And then, you know, when I finally was 20, like nearly 21 even, and I like, okay, I'm gonna have sex for the first time, I feel like I had a really good vision of what sex was that was like very far from what like the mainstream and only the sex education that I got in school offered. So I'm very grateful for that. And it obviously, like on the creative side, like helped me explore a lot, you know, online, like posting things, because it's a vibe, like it's a, there's a lot of people, so people are reading your stuff, you're getting feedback, and it's all happening, you know, lively there, like at the same time you post something, the next day there's a bunch of comments, people like this, people don't like that. So I got to test like how to write, how to do a hook, what do people respond to. So I'm very grateful for that. I mean, I did like skip on a lot of, you know, other milestones, I guess, that normal teenagers have when they are out and about doing stuff. But I think it was really for the best. But like I said, like in my professional, like in my student life, I was really falling apart. Like I was a gifted small child that turned into a damaged teenager. And it was just a lot. Like I was having a hard time at home. I was like having a hard time with the social aspect of the teenage years. So my grades dropped dramatically. And I was just not interested in that anymore. Like I just wanted to write. And my teachers were like,
what to do with her?
Not get it. They didn't understand at all. Like they really thought, like, I think they thought like, wow, this girl had so much potential. Look at her now. It's all gone.
It's a waste of.
I remember having this moment last year when I was going to Paris to be interviewed by Ate, like the channel. Yeah, it was a really nice moment. And I was like at the airport and, you know, I was going to be interviewed by them in the inside the Banksy Museum for a feature. And I remember just thinking like, huh, in your face, teachers, writing smut did get me far. I'm going to
just by believing into myself, I made it. Yeah. How did you find out that you really want to make a passion out of it, like a living, like really to work in that?
Well, I didn't even had no idea that was even possible. Like it really, yeah. I went to film school and specialized in screenwriting because, like I said, I've always wanted to be a writer, and that was it, what I wanted to do. And through, you know, college, I was still writing online, and I had this little blog in which I posted my stuff, but it was not like I was hiding it from anyone, but it was not like, it was this different identity that I had online.
Yeah, because of the stigma today. I mean, what would you do? Yeah. I mean, people judge you as soon as you say out loud, I did this, I'm working in the industry or doing something with erotic. I mean, it's the same I started with coaching and now I'm studying sexual therapy, and people are like, what the heck? I mean, it's still a stigma on and label.
Oh, absolutely. And there is like this huge stigma on erotica that's like second class literature, second, like it's not really art. And I was going to this very progressive, like artsy university in São Paulo, you know, like lots of smart kids, and everyone was like, oh, I want to do serious art and do serious things, you know, like. And I felt like I couldn't tell them, well, I want to write about sex. No one would take me seriously. I wanted to be taken seriously as a writer.
Did you figure out while studying that it changed your way of writing? Like you said, you studied.
I think, like, especially in the beginning, because when I went to college, it was like also socially, it was the moment that I was, have you watched Glee?
Yes.
You know, it was like Glee, like those kind of kids. And when I went to college, it's like, oh my God, I finally have friends and people like me. And it was really, it was like Harry Potter going to Hogwarts for the first time. So I really, really cared about these people's opinion of me. You know, I really wanted to fit in. It was so important for me to belong. And so I kind of like really tried to adapt. Towards the end, I was like feeling like I was more being my authentic self when it comes to my artistic expression. You know, as like through the nearly 5 years of my education, I was like, okay, finding my way again. But there was definitely a moment there that was like really trying to write about things that I should be writing about instead of what I really wanted to say. And it's just so forced. It's never good when it is like that.
No, it's not, because it feels hard and then you fight and then it's never gonna read like when it just comes naturally and it's easy and you have like, I can see and I can hear your fire in your eyes and that lightning, like it really drives you. And it's something which you really do from the bottom out of your heart. And that's what I appreciate, because people always think, as you said before, are we normal? Are we, something is not right with us? Like, who defines that? Like,
yeah, but the thing is, when you, that's the thing. It's like, now I found this community of people. I'm like, yeah, but when you don't, then it's so isolating, right? You're just like, wow. So yeah, that's like how I felt. And after I graduated college, I started working in the industry, like in Brazil. So I was doing screenwriting and production, and it was fine. You know, it was like very hustle culture. São Paulo is like very much like that. And I got a job in production, like content production, and I got to a managing position quite early on. Like, I was 25, and it looked like my career was like getting into a very defined path very early.
So
and I started to get really nervous about it. And because I didn't want to be doing that, you know. And I was working so much, I was working like 60, 70 hours a week, and I felt like my creativity was really stifled. I couldn't write anymore. It's like, it felt like it was so dry, you know, like it didn't. And that's when the alarm bells really went off. It's like, there is something really wrong, because I've been writing since I was six, and now suddenly I can't do it anymore. Like, there is, I can't recognize myself like this. And I had, you know, my blog still, that it was like a separate thing. And I decided like, okay, I need to make a change in my life. Like, this is not, you know, if I don't, as I felt like it's also, you know, you start making a bit more money and you like, you get comfortable in that position. So, and I like, for the first time, so I was like, if I stay a little bit longer, I'm not going to get out, you know? So I was like, okay, I need to make a change in my life. It needs to be a real big change. And at the time, like, I've always wanted to live abroad, just to see the world, to have different experiences. That was a dream of mine. I applied for a scholarship for a screenwriting master's in New York. Didn't get it. Was very sad about it. But I was like, okay, if it's not New York, then where else could I go? And I didn't know, but it was like saving money on the side for like whatever happens. And then in 2015, I came to Germany as part of like my first Euro trip. I wasn't even gonna come here. Like, I was going to go to Zurich instead. But then, you know, last minute, it's like, this, it looks so expensive. I have to change the money. It's too complicated. So I decided to come to Berlin, because my favorite movie, which is a German Brazilian movie, is like, half of it is set in Berlin. So I was like, okay, cool. Then I'll go to Berlin and I'll visit the locations of the movie. And yeah, that's what I did. And then I came here, and I remember it was so funny, because I was at this hostel, and, you know, some girls at the hostel and I, we went to a club, and it was not a great club, like now I know, but at the time, I mean, it wasn't even like a super fun night or anything. It was okay. But when I was leaving, it was already morning and I took the train and the train was like going through the city. And I looked outside of the train window and I felt something like twist inside me. And I was like, I need to live here. Mm. Like, I need to come here. And
calling.
I mean, which was a bit a crazy decision, but whatever, it worked out. So I went back home, started like learning German, found, you know, a master's program because I needed to come here on a visa. And lo and behold, like a year after, I was like quitting my job, leaving my very cute apartment, my relationship at the time, and being like, bye, new start. But, and then, you know, the crucial thing that happened at that moment was like, okay, I need to, I need to integrate this other part of my life into my real life. It's not enough for me to have this like secret thing going on online.
Like your heart was, yeah, totally.
Yeah, like I needed both things to be part of my life. And I felt like really deeply inside of me that I needed that to be happy. So I was like, I had a conversation with myself. I was like, okay, I'm willing to face all the consequences that are going to come out of it in my family life, in my work life, in my love life, you know, because there are repercussions and I've dealt with them in this past years. But yeah, I made the decision and I came here and I would love to say, oh yeah, and then everything fell into place like instantly.
How was it in the beginning to really face that and say, I'm like, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've been doing, this is what I've drawn to, that what gives me joy, that what really gives me, that is me. And the other part, which is also me, but now we put it basically two hearts together to make one, and here I am.
Yeah, I mean, it was not easy, like it was really difficult because first, like I changed my life completely. I came to a country that I didn't like, I spoke a little bit of the language, but I mean, I'll have to confess that my German is pretty shit until today. And like, I didn't know anybody. I knew nobody. Like, I had no like ties to, when I think about it, I was like, that was a little bit crazy. I just moved here and it was the middle of winter. It was super depressing. Like, it was really hard. I had a rough start. And I went from like being a professional and having a career and having, you know, my own money to like being back to being a student and like having no money at all. Going back to like living in dorms, like really like start again, like start over. And that was difficult. And I didn't really think like, oh, I'm going to start writing about sex and this is going to become my job. I didn't really have like, I was just, I need this to be out. Like, I need people to know this about me. So what I did in the beginning was just, I started like to post, and it was very, like, I would just go on Facebook whenever I posted something on my blog, I'm like, oh, there isn't. And then I made a YouTube channel in Portuguese, which is sadly like dead now because I don't have the time. But I started posting the videos and people reacted really well to it. And that brought people into my circle, people of the industry, I guess. So I have, it's really funny, like a really good friend, Hakeo, she's, you know, one of the founders of Pornceptual here in Berlin, which is an art collective, a party that's like queer and sex positive. And she is one of the people that saw a video of mine because we had a friend in common. And she was like, reached out to me. She's like, oh, I found it interesting what you're talking about. Like, let's go have dinner. And we became friends. It's like, this one of the, like, that opened a lot of doors for me, which I'm super grateful for. Still work with them to this day. It's like, yeah, they hold a really special place in my heart. And so slowly, like, people started to know, like, because I think that that's one of the, like, if I can give any advice, you know, There are some, but like, first of all, people are not gonna know what you want to do or what you have to show if you don't show it, you know. And it can be really nerve-wracking because you don't know how your friends are going to react to it. You don't know how like it's going to be perceived. But the thing is, like, you can't expect people to guess like what's on your mind, what you want to create, what you want to do. You really need to like say it out loud, as scary as it is. And you might be surprised, because when you start talking about it, when you start like, it doesn't even have to be related to eroticism or sex. I think that goes for anything, you know. If you want to be, I don't know, a business consultant or something, and you have it inside you, but you're like, you need to like start bringing it up to people. Yeah. That's one advice. The other advice that I would say is like, don't wait until things are perfect for you to start. That's definitely something that I struggle with. And with like the YouTube channel, for example, I'm a terrible editor. Like I hate cutting, like I'm bad at it. And I had like this, a lot of insecurities about it, because I was like, oh, I should be good at this, because I went to film school. It wasn't my specialization, but I'm pretty bad. But it was like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, it's not perfect. I don't care. Like, what matters is the content. I'm just going to put it out there and just come to terms with the fact that I'm not a good editor, and that's okay. And I got a little better in doing it and posting it. But imagine if I had been like, oh, but I'm not a very good editor, so I'm not going to post these videos. I'm not going to do it. So yeah, this like let go of this total perfectionism. And the other thing is, and this is something that I think that like life came full circle, is just when I was reading all of that fan fiction, most of it was of my favorite band, which is My Chemical Romance. It's an emo, kids will recognize it. And years after, the lead singer, who's also a comic book artist, was doing a panel at the Comic Con in Sao Paulo, and I went there like right before I moved to Berlin. And it was a very interesting panel about creativity and working with art. And I heard in that panel, it's like, if you want to do art as a job, then you need to start treating it as a job long before it is. And I know that it's very complicated advice, because that implies that you're going to have to put a lot of work in and not make money off it. And it's not the same for other professionals as professions. So I do understand the injustice of it, but it has to be like that. You know, it has to be like that. And it's like something that I took very seriously. Of course, I was like working all kinds of odd jobs, you know, to barely scrape by. So I was like doing all the like student jobs, and I was working as a pub crawl leader. Like, that was crazy, because I would come home at like 2-3 in the morning from work, and then had like classes for my master's at 9, and like I was juggling all of that. But I really tried to be really consistent, and I didn't know, like, it's not like, oh, I'm gonna post in this blog and then something's gonna happen. I don't know. I was just doing it because I felt like that was important. And I remember so many times, like, there was this one time I was talking to a friend, and he was like, it was summer in Berlin, and he was like, oh, we are going to, I don't know, somewhere, a bar maybe. And I was like, no, I have to go home because I have to do something for my blog. And he was like, you know, basically like, but you don't have to, right? And he was like, self-imposed. And I was like, yeah, but I felt like that's the only thing that mattered. That's the only thing I really had to do.
Yes, you had to, because that's what I ask or get asked a lot of times, because for me, that was always a part. When I don't do that for me, I basically cannot trust my own word anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, for me, it always felt like I'm cheating on myself, and I've stopped believing myself because I give the power to other people. Of course, sometimes situations happen like that, but the more it happens, the more you drop your dream, basically.
Yeah, I feel like It is like unjust sometimes because, you know, like we also deserve to have fun and connect with people. And it's hard. You're working a job and it's like, and this is going anywhere. And, you know, I understand the, like, I've certainly had moments where it's like, fuck it. You know, what's the point? No one is reading this. But I feel like the most precious commodity that we have in life is time. No, that's basically life itself. It's like the time that we have on earth.
Not coming and back.
To spend that time like working towards whatever it is that you want, like whatever it is, the expression of your authentic self. I don't want to sound like, I know that's complicated, you know, and it takes a level of privilege to even be able to have the time to figure it out for yourself, like what is that, and you know, but like that time invested in the things that really matter, like it's the best. And sometimes it doesn't have to be work, you know, you can also like spend that time building your relationships or to me it was, because my work is an expression of my self.
Obviously.
And yeah, so do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I feel you, because that's how it is. And people will only feel it when they really found that calling within themselves, where there's like, that's just what I want to do. It's like, yeah. It drives me. It's like a fire, which is always there. And you cannot, no matter how much water you put top on it, or it's not going to get out. It is just there. And that's how you felt. And that's why it was calling you. But did you feeling it changed when you moved to Berlin and you start basically from scratch? Like, did you have the feeling it was easier to get out there? It's like, okay, this is me. No one basically know me. So basically I can just tell, okay, this is Anna. I'm writing that blog and I'm doing that. And that's who I am. Or do you have the feeling it came step
by
step?
Yeah. I mean, It was like a clean slate, right? So I'm a very all or nothing person. I don't do like gradual very well. So I think it definitely helped. It's like, okay, new country, new continent, new identity, new this. But there were lots of moments in which was like, what am I doing? Like, what did I do? You know,
why did I even come here?
I had a life. It's like I had, you know, things going for me. Why did I put myself?
But you were not happy. Like, you were not happy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it's like I would always tell myself in those moments, like, oh my God, I could have just changed my job. Like, it didn't have to go. Like, but I guess I did, and I think that it worked. It worked out in the end, but it was not easy. And that's the thing. It's like I would, you know, post on the blog and like try to make, I don't know what I was doing actually. I was just trying to get it out there, and slowly like I started to meet people in the industry.
How did it work from there on? Was it easier once you got into the industry and you basically settled and you basically got to know people who liked your work?
It was very gradual. Like, so it was not like, you know, one day things started happening. It was more like slowly, like some person would be like, oh, I've seen that you write this, would you write something for me for this event?
Unexpected.
And I would do that, you know, and like slowly, like people started to know what I was doing, and I got to know people around. And then eventually in 2019, was it? Yeah. Yeah. 2019. Got a job as editor-in-chief at this online erotica publisher, and that was like a real like change, because you know, that was like a job in the industry, and I didn't even know that that was possible. I mean, I had the experience to back it up, but I just, you know. And it was through people that knew me and that knew what I was doing that I got referred to that job. And that was great, because I like got to work with many other erotic writers, from so many different countries, so many different styles, so many different approaches to erotica. And for me, like, to, you know, have come from that, like, little girl and her computer, like, typing away, and suddenly I was like among all these people that had this interest in common. It was so, yeah, it was really like rewarding. And I stayed there for a little over a year, but I think that, like, in my heart, even though I do enjoy editing and I do enjoy the act of editing people's work, in my heart, I was always more of a creator than an editor.
The writing.
So, like, by then, I already knew a lot of people, and I was being asked to do, like, freelance work here and there, like, creating stuff. So I decided to be like, okay, let's take another leap of faith and try to get to do that on a full-time basis, like, basically be a freelancer.
But just one question. Did you also have the feeling once you really had that job in the industry that the community was as positive as you experienced it before? Or do you also have sometimes the feeling like even in that industry, you sometimes have conservative people, or like, would you say,
oh,
no?
There was lots of weird stuff going on.
Okay.
There was lots of weird things. Yeah, it's not like it's not rainbows and sunshines, that's for sure.
Yeah, but even that we have to put on the table, because people always think it's like, even like the industry already has a stigma, and people always like, oh, it's so fun and it's so easy to jump in.
No,
every industry has its pros.
No, there is like lots of exploitation. There is a lot of people that will expect you to like work for free. There is a lot of like idea stealing.
So the normal things you would basically have to deal with a normal job as well.
Yes, absolutely. It's like all the annoying things.
People always put it up on a podest. It's like, oh, it's like the non plus ultra and you will be rich. I'm like,
no.
No,
I mean, I wouldn't advise anyone to do this if they want to be rich.
Thank you so much, Anna. Even that is a stigma. People always think like, not even OnlyFans makes everyone rich, just to tell you guys. Like,
oh my God. People
job.
Think that OnlyFans is easy. They got it so backwards. Like, I have many friends who are, you know, in OnlyFans, and I have many friends who are performers and sex workers. And, you know, to think that that's an easy job or an easy way out, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. The amount of promotion, like, the amount of marketing, the amount of like hours that you have to put in. I was working with an agency creating some content like for OnlyFans models on exactly those things, like the finance marketing aspect of it. And it's just like, it's you like,
you have to work your ass
so
off.
So much work.
Say it how it is. I mean, even when people think like, oh, you just like, you have it way easier because you're an escort, or you fucking have to work your ass off to get onto a financial stable level. Like,
yeah. And it's not even like, yeah, in the part of like the escorting part of the job is just one side of the job, because you have to do so many things on top.
And they have to do it themselves. I mean,
exactly.
I just say, you manage it. Of course, I had to pay 30% commission to them, but it's like they have to do it all themselves.
Yeah. And like against censorship, against stigma, against, you know, a system that is not helping, dealing with violence, dealing with threats, like, how to think that work with sex is the easy way out. Like, it's just it's ignorant in the sense of like ignoring the reality of it, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I'm very fortunate. I feel very grateful for the opportunities that I have, but it's not like glitz and glam.
Yeah. But how did it end up after you really said, okay, I give it another shot and face to really jump onto it now in my profession, like, get out
okay,
of
it. Okay, now that was easier. Like, of course, in the beginning, basically, and that's something that I also tell people, is that, like, you need to be shameless. So I basically wrote everyone that I knew in industry, and I was like, I'm available to create content if you need it. That's what I did. And even people that I didn't know, like, you know, platforms, apps, audio erotica apps, like things that I thought like I can contribute to this, I would just write them and be like, this is my expertise. These are my writing samples.
This is me. Here I am.
Yeah, exactly. If you need something,
love it.
Let me know. And people did let me know, like right away. Like some people just got back to me right away and were like, yeah, it sounds interesting. Let's do this. So for some people, it took longer. So they, you know, months after, they were like, actually, so that's something that's important as well. Sometimes it doesn't happen right away, right? A lot of the things that in my professional life have been such a slow burn. So I meet someone and then 2 years after they refer me to something, you know. So yeah, basically that. And then it started like, this was 3 years ago now. And it's been going strong. Of course, the like freelance life is always unstable and you have to get used to that. And there are jobs that are more fun and fulfilling. There are jobs that I take this more like, okay, I'm going to do this for the money. I don't want to like give the impression to people that I only work with fun, fulfilling, like cool things. That's not the case at all. Like I do boring editing work, like things like that as well. And I need to do that, like, you know, so I can pay all my bills. And I think that we need to normalize talking about that because
thanks. Yes.
Yeah.
There's always those parts you don't like and there's always parts you don't like. I mean,
yeah. And as a freelancer, it's so nice, like when you have different skills, you know, because when you're like, oh, this, I don't have any writing gigs this month, but I can also edit. So that's easier to find. And that makes it actually brings more stability into my life in the sense that I get to do the fun jobs that don't pay as much.
Yes, yes. But do you still like now you like, is it now content creator for the erotic scene or are you still writing or your blog or like what?
No, not my blog, because my blog is like in Portuguese and it's like blogs today nowadays in the internet landscape, they are not, you know, it's
outdated, is it?
The investment of time, you know. So sadly, no. I mean, I post on it sporadically when I have a spur of inspiration for something, but I'm still writing. But now, like, it's mostly commissioned work. I would say that like 80% of my creative writing today, like, let's not include, I don't know, personal journaling, is commissioned work. And how that happens,
that's amazing, like to really make out a living out of it with your passion and to really,
it is incredible. I mean, I sometimes I really need to pinch myself and like, I can't believe this is my life, you know. It's really rewarding. I'm so grateful for it. And also the people that I work with, you know, for the most, I mean, I've had bad experiences. I've had like to chase people to pay me, things like that. It happens. But for the most part, especially as a freelancer, I've had like really positive experiences with really inspiring people that are trying to create like a vision of sexuality that is fun, it's positive, it's destigmatized. Like I feel like it's not only, yeah, like nice, we work with the same topics. Like, no, we have the same view on how this should be done. And yeah, that's I think the best part of it for me. I was working on a script for an ethical, can I say porn or should I say corn?
No, just say it.
Okay. So I was working on a script for an ethical porn company just a few weeks ago, and it was an educational / porn video.
Love
which
it.
To me is fantastic, you know, that they're even giving it a shot, because I've always been a firm believer in like bridging the gap between pleasure and education.
Yes.
I think that the way that we separate things does not work and it shouldn't be like that. And so I was working on this script and yeah, I was talking to the director And I thought like it was becoming a little bit too educational. So I was like trying to like cut it back a little bit. And she was like, no, let's put it in. Like, this is important information. You know, people need to know this.
Exactly. And here it is the same try and error. You will not know if people like it that way. Like, they have to try it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's like Berlin is a great hub in that sense that there are companies that are willing to bet money.
Yes.
On trying that, you know, I mean, that's rare around the world.
Well,
of course, it's an industry that is like poor and it doesn't have a lot of money. I mean, maybe the sex tech part has the most money, but content creation, not a lot. But still, I feel like that's very valuable. I feel very grateful to be able to work with companies that have the same ethos that I have. You know, it's not to say that everything's perfect, that all the content that we're going to put out is perfect, and everything that everybody that works there, it's not that, but there is like a common striving for sex positivity, which I'm glad to be a part of. And yeah, so I now like I'm getting my degree in sex education. And I've also been working on a project about the, so that's the other side, like a project about clitoral anatomy for about 7 years with Jim here. So since I moved to Berlin, basically, and it's been
going. How's that going?
I mean, it's so funny because it started as just like, let's talk about the clit, right? Because nobody, I mean, it started because my friend saw the clit for the first time when she was over 30. She was really impressed that she had never seen it before. So it started very small and it grew into this science community. I would say it's a science communication project now. So we have an Instagram in which we get, you know, the recent research into clitoral anatomy, and we transform it into Instagram friendly bite-sized information so people can learn about it.
And that's the gap. I mean, honestly speaking, because a scientist or people who are like out there studying that for many years, and then they just tell you, oh, you need an Instagram. They have no clue. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes. And communicating science is difficult.
Had to translate and put it in there that it is nice, sexy, so that people, and especially the younger, watch it.
Yeah, that's what we try to do. Now, we're sadly not putting as much energy as we wished, because there's three of us. One of my friends had a baby. The other one started like a degree that's quite demanding, and I am like really busy. So we're not being able to dedicate as much to it, but it's definitely, it's ongoing, and that we're doing like curation and collaboration with other projects as well. And it has taught me so much, because I do public speaking on that subject now. And it's really interesting how much I was able to learn, you know, from reading the literature around clitoral anatomy and everything that's been going out in the past years. And it's just like, it's the gift that keeps giving. Like, I learn something new every day with this project. It's amazing.
But do you have the feeling, because I observe the same in my passion, that once you're in that industry, once you work with that, with your passion, you are so strived that you're like, I want to move something. I want to get further. But once you come to a point where there's basically that wall from society, where you have the feeling, at least that was my feeling. I don't know if you agree that you're like, society is not growing as quick as we do.
It's certainly not.
People always said, no, we are so open. I was like, not even companies are that open. They tell you, oh yeah, we are gender friendly and we are that. And I'm a person, I test that out, how gender friendly companies are, how whatever they preach and whatever they make marketing. I was like, do they really live that, what they say? And most
of them don't.
Thank you. It's a marketing gag, basically.
Yeah, and there is a lot of people in our industry that, like, especially in the higher ranks, I think that, like, people that are working in creating whatever are, for the most part, really passionate. But there is a lot of people that are in it for the money. Like, sexual wellness is, like, this huge thing now. So, you know, they just want to sell some toys and pocket the money, whatever. I feel like... I mean, I don't know, because I live so much in my bubble nowadays, like in Berlin with my friends, like the things around me. So I'm not so often confronted with that bias from society.
But you see it, and you could answer my question that you basically see it on the globe. That's like, okay.
I see it when I see it the most with social media censorship.
Yes.
Like, that's when I
drives me crazy.
Yeah, that's when it affects me. I'm like, wow, what the hell? Because with the clitoris project, we don't have like, it's a mascot, which is a cartoon, and it's sex education content. So basically, like, what are the tissues that compose the crew of the clitoris, like things like that. And you know, we cannot promote on Instagram, we cannot do anything. And it's like, with my personal Instagram, I mean, I don't agree, but whatever, like, Meta doesn't like women in lingerie when they're doing it themselves, because if they're selling something for someone else, that's fine, but whatever. But with the clit project, like, I don't understand it. This is like kid-friendly sex education, not kid-friendly, but like teenage-friendly sex education.
Totally agree with you.
There's just like no distinction and no desire to have any nuance in this. You know, the way that Meta paints everything with the same brush is like basically hardcore porn and talking about
sex education. It's easier to watch than education on Instagram.
It's the same, and it's like, wow, this is crazy. Like, people are really scared of sex. Like, really scared. And
what is your personal opinion? Why? Do you think that still is a religious topic because you cannot control it and people are still afraid of that because it has power? I mean, let's be honest, the female, the whole energy, the whole thing, it has something. I don't know. Sometimes I had people like, okay, we put a stigma on it so we can control it. We put it as, bah, it's bad, it's shame. It's like,
I mean, I have my own, I don't know, like, I feel like religion for sure. I feel like there's this fear that if we were to follow our most basic instincts, nobody would do anything but fuck all day. Maybe. So that would lead to
even that is not going to be true. Look at the porn stars and their documentaries, not even they. Because once you have it all day, you're sick of it. I mean, I can tell a story out of it. I was on escort myself. Like, once in a while, you're like, honestly, and I love sex, but you come to a point where it's like, and you have a relationship, you go have sex, you get money for sex, and then you're like, fuck it, I want something else. I'm so done with it. It's just so ordinary. It's like drinking or wishing, cleaning your
room. I mean, I would like say that's like that with everything, right? You eat your favorite dish every day and it becomes whatever. But I also think that is in particular regarding queer or female sexuality. So, you know, I feel like the one of the tools, one of the main tools for the patriarchy to control,
yes, of course,
women, is through sexuality.
Yes.
So whether it is you're having too much sex, you're not having enough sex, you're getting an abortion, you're not getting an abortion, like, there is just so much control around that.
When I would say kids, how to have kids, how to get them, how to get married.
Yeah, I would say like the two main tools is like patrimonial, so like through money and through sex. And yeah. So and I even posted something on my Instagram yesterday about this. It's like, it's funny, right? Because we are all so used to seeing sexualized images of women. Like, I dare you to go outside and walk three blocks even before you find, like, you see an ad of someone in lingerie. Like, that's fine. Like, no one, like, you know, but if women are doing it themselves, that's dangerous, because that's sexual agency. And that means that, you know, there is not the element of control there. Your sexuality is not you being used to sell stuff. It's not being used to satisfy the desires of others. And if you combine that with money, right? So sex work. So you're like getting the two things that patriarchy uses to control you. That's a no-go. And also, I think that the policing of queer bodies, of basically anybody that is not white on Instagram or white and slender, you know, it has to do with keeping the status quo in the sense that like the family unit, all of these things, it's very threatening when people decide to challenge gender norms, you know, because that means what's going to happen to family? I mean, maybe nothing, but our society is so basically structured around that heteronormative patriarchal ideal, you know, that anything that deviates. And I think sex is a powerful tool. It's like one of the drivers for us to connect, to live, to, you know, so to give the control of it to people instead of using it to make money.
But we still haven't figured it out, no matter how. Nobody can figure out his own gender and how we function and what we want and what we don't want. Like, let's be honest.
And it's crazy because the same people who want to censor fucking like whatever on Instagram are the same people who are consuming mainstream porn all day.
Yes.
Yeah. So what get like that, the hypocrisy of it, you know?
It's like a comic.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, oh, it's fine if I'm gonna jerk off to this thing that, like, you know, this mainstream port that was created for me. I mean, you can even argue, like, is it? But if you are posting pictures of yourself in lingerie, no, that's not allowed.
Yeah, that's true. To summarize it up, what do you love about most about your job now?
Oh, fuck.
Like to people, like when they say like, oh, I'm really interested in the whole erotic in sex or whatever, and I really want to jump into that. Like, yes, you can. There's jobs out there, we can tell you.
There is. I didn't know. I had no idea that this could be a thing. Like now I write for like different platforms. So I create like scripts, audio scripts, articles, stories. It really depends. But I think that like what I love.
You can be you.
Yes. And I think it's also very rewarding when people approach me and they say that my work has touched them in some way. Like that is always like, because I'm sure you relate, like we work isolated with our own computers, like we don't really see the impact of whatever we do, you know. And when people come up to me and they're like, well, you know, I've watched this video, I've seen this thing that you made, and I showed it to my boyfriend. Like I had a person once approach me, was like, I had an orgasm for the first time after I heard you talk about the clit. Those are the moments it's like, wow, this is, I started because I wanted to express myself, but this has become bigger than myself.
It's meaningful, you know? Because you can touch others deeply.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and of course the job also has its cons. I mean, we talked about it a lot. It is like a normal other job, but are you now having the feeling that you're way more connected to yourself than you were before? Once you said it's like, now I'm facing whatever it takes, but this is me in my wholeness, in my unity.
Yes, and it's, I mean, I'm not a religious person.
You don't need to be religious.
But I feel like, and you know, when people say like God speaking to me, like that's what I feel when I'm doing my job. Like I feel so connected to my purpose. It's like, this is what I'm meant to do in life. You know, it's a feeling of like, self-fulfillment that I never thought I would experience. It's not to say that I don't have problems. It's not to say that I don't have annoying things in my life and things that I wish were different. Not at all. But I do feel like connected to myself in a way that I didn't even expect was possible. It's really, I am like humbled by this feeling. I'm really, really grateful for it.
And that's what people shared. I mean, you just followed and you gave a lot of risks and you gave up so many things. And that is the reward at the end. What people's like, but you were just lucky. I mean, like, no, I just followed that that calling and that voice.
I mean, I used to say that my mom, like, I was like, you need luck. And sometimes you need luck. And sometimes you need contacts. And sometimes, like, of course, having money, having contacts, being able-bodied, being, you know, not being neurodivergent, all of that helps. But my mom used to say, like, luck is talent and opportunity.
Totally agree.
So just need to like work on it and be ready for when the opportunity presents itself and grab it. Because I have like, I suffer from imposter syndrome every day. Like I fight against it, but that hasn't stopped me from being like, I'm still going to go like after it. I'm still going to get the job. I'm still going to email this person, you know, and say like, offer my services. Yeah.
But that's how it starts, to get over this fear and to really just jump over your shadows and jump over what triggers you and what you're most afraid of, and then just do it. I mean, that's how things are going and that's how things are getting started. Other than that, it's not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just another quick question. You said you're an erotic activism. What is that? Like, how do you call activism for yourself? Like, what is
well,
that?
I call myself a pleasure activist. Like, there is a whole movement in pleasure activism, and
really?
Yes, it encompasses a variety of things, and it's not only about sex. It's about like having more pleasure in life, and especially for those who come from oppressed minorities, the ability to have, you know, pleasure and to prioritize that is really a political statement, because once you have more of that, like, you can build a better life for yourself. Of course, again, none of that is easy, but that's what this activism is about. For me personally, my activism revolves more around sexual pleasure. And I would say, like, for me, sex is political. I don't, you know, I think it's something that is very connected. It can be empowering, it can be subversive, and that's the side of sex that interests me. And in my activism, so when I'm writing, when I'm creating sex educational content, when I'm doing public speaking and teaching people about the clit and like doing, you know, sessions in which they're going to touch themselves and teach men how the clit works, like, this is all me being an activist for people to have more pleasure in their lives. And I feel like there is not a one way of doing it. You know, it looks different for everybody, but my job as an activist is to give people more tools for their toolbox so they can have more pleasure. I feel like it's so powerful to have more pleasure in your life. It doesn't have to be sexual always, right? Sometimes pleasure can be from a really nice coffee or like cuddling with my cat, you know, but to prioritize that and to understand ourselves as worthy of enjoying pleasure.
That touches me. It does. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I really believe. And that's, you know, that's how I call myself a pleasure activist. Like, I'm being an activist in trying to get people to have more pleasure in their lives and enjoy them more. And the way that I do it is through sexual pleasure, because that's my area of specialty. As we've said, this has been my passion. So this is how I can contribute, basically.
Love it. And what is your wish for the next couple of years? Like, once you see, like, okay, or maybe a vision, or maybe for some people it became a life vision for the next couple of years in that industry?
For the industry or for myself?
Both.
Okay, for the industry, I would really love to see a turn in censorship and us having like real conversations about that. That would be lovely. I know that's a long shot. I'm doing like a project now, a coalition to advocate for sex positive content in AI. I think that we have an opportunity now that this is a new thing, and who knows, maybe with our foot on the door. It's called Open Mind AI, if like anybody wants to look it up. It's still in the very beginning, but we're trying. And I would love to see that. That would be my main wish. I trust so much the people in the industry, my peers. I think that, you know, people are so desperate to have the space to do quality work. We just need to be not censored and to have the space. That's basically it. So I would wish for that for the industry. And more money never hurts.
But it will become one of the billion industries in the next couple of years.
That's, yeah, I mean, so wouldn't hurt. For myself, damn. I mean, I have like some specific like personal goals. But I would like to work with what I work in more places, like different places. I've spent some time in Colombia and I like did some work there. That was very interesting. So the intersection between how countries have like different policies towards sexuality really interests me. So I would like to do more work in that field. Excited to get my degree done. And I definitely, yeah, I want to have the chance to keep doing what I'm doing. And just larger scales of it. So more productions, more chances of like doing longer. Maybe that would be nice. I would like to write a feature length porn film. I think that would be something that I would really be proud of myself in achieving. But yeah, I would say that like professional wise, I have like milestones that I want to reach, but mostly I just want to keep having the opportunity of doing what I'm doing and not stopping and just keep going. And it's a very nice position to be in. I realize that, yeah.
Yes, that is. Anna, thank you so much for having you. I will put the links, everything, how to find you on Instagram, on YouTube, whatever you want to share, we share in the comment section. And it has been a pleasure talking with
It was my pleasure.
much. Any last words?
Well, go ahead and do something pleasurable for you today. That would be my advice.
More sex.